and welcome to Fueling Transformation, a podcast hosted by Impact 100 Metro Detroit, a nonprofit serving nonprofits. We are a group of women from all walks of life who practice the work of collective giving. This year, we will have given over $860,000 since our inception in 2016. Fueling Transformation has been our motto since day one, and it was a no-brainer that it become the name of our podcast. The amazing nonprofit organizations in Metro Detroit are the true heroes. Our grants simply help fund transformational projects that these nonprofit heroes work so hard to execute. This podcast is intended to highlight the work of local nonprofit heroes in Metro Detroit, connect our members and listeners to those nonprofits who could use their help, and aid women in becoming philanthropic leaders in their communities. And now, here's Fueling Transformation.
Hi, this is Laurie Brown, one of the producers of Fueling Transformation. This week's episode has a little different format as it highlights one of our coffee and conversations. If after this episode you're feeling a little FOMO, fear of missing out, feel free to join us live at our next coffee and conversation on July 22nd at 9 a.m. Registration can be found on our website, which is in the description box below. Enjoy.
Welcome, everyone. My name is Kelly Walsh. I am one of our membership co-chairs of Impact 100 Metro Detroit, and I'm just really excited to see faces that we haven't seen in quite some time and names, both of members and our friends. So thank you for joining us today as we are welcoming Eric Miller from the Lawn Academy and Coleman Yoakum with Micah 6 to check in with them. They were both our grant winners last year. So we're just going to do kind of a update and hear all the exciting things that they've had. In the meantime, it's a casual conversation for those of you that haven't joined us. I'm your moderator, your kind of host, if you will, and I'll drive some of the questions, but love to get questions in the chat, or you can hit the raise your hand feature and ask the questions yourself, or directly ping me. I'm Kelly Walsh, and I can and I'll call on you. Impact 100, for those that aren't familiar, Impact 100 Metro Detroit is a women's collective giving organization that believes in high impact grants that fuel transformation in our community. We have been around since 2016. After this year's big give, we will have given $864,000 to our community, and we are just incredibly grateful to be in that opportunity and to be in that position to do so. And we are just completely humbled and honored with our nonprofit heroes. So Eric Miller with the Lawn Academy was one of our winners last year. Our grant funded the purchase of the hub, a new hub in Detroit for the Lawn Academy, which Eric can go into a little bit more detail. And Coleman Yoakum is the CEO of Micah 6 Community, where our grant was to fund a hoop house and additional green space that will improve their produce for the upcoming spring and summer. So we are so excited to have both of you guys here today. I think my first question that I would love to just ask you is, you know, what's happened in the past year, which I know this is a loaded question because I know both of you have had a lot happening. So maybe if you can each spend maybe 3 to 4 minutes, 5 minutes, just giving us since we've last seen you as an organization, what's happening? Eric, are you in a good spot to start?
Yes, I am. Okay, can you hear me?
Yep, we're good.
Great. First of all, it's great seeing everyone today. So really love that. So thanks a lot. It's been a very, very great year. A lot has happened since we were awarded the grant. And I still remember coming outside and being surprised and all of that. You know, it still sends chills, right? I thought that was awesome. So the first thing we did, it took us a long time, believe it or not, to find a location, because one of the strangest things, even during the pandemic, one thing that has gone in the opposite direction when it comes to prices is real estate. So real estate is skyrocketing, especially in the city of Detroit. So we searched and searched, And, you know, so we said, you know what, this is not working. So we just started pounding the pavement, and we had someone just, you know, looking at empty buildings and just calling people up and saying, hey, is this property available? So the place we found was just that type of a place. It wasn't listed in the general MLS. And the person that helped us find it, they called, and lo and behold, it was for sale. And I was thinking it was going to be probably at least $250,000 to $300,000, because that's what it's pretty much worth. And lo and behold, we were able to negotiate it. We said, listen, we have these great group of people. It's 100 women and from Impact 100 Metro Detroit. They gave up their own money and things like that to see something great happen. And so we used that negotiating power, and we were able to purchase the building outright with the grant that we received, which is awesome, which is totally awesome. And so I'm pumped up about it. I know, Kelly, you got a chance to go by there about a month ago. Since then, we've done some beautification outside. We've had the youth outside. They've been beautifying it. And it was a former bank, so we couldn't ask for a more secure location, because that was one of the top things on our list for the youth, to have a secure location. And you can't get more secure than a bank. So it's awesome. It looks great inside. And we're going to be doing some painting in the upcoming weeks, and installing computers and stations. And we'll be June 12th is our date. We're going to be opening it up on the 12th. So I'm pumped. I am pumped. So that's what
you
I have.
What's kind of cool is I can't remember exactly, and you guys might remember the date that we gave you guys, that we announced, or that we even, and for those of you who aren't aware, last year, obviously it was all during the pandemic. And so we ended up doing kind of a prize patrol, a little bit like Ed McMahon, where we just literally showed up on their front doorsteps with a big check and balloons and a small group of socially distanced but fast women. And, you know, Eric, this is his, like a side hustle in some ways, if you will. So we had to get him to work with his boss at FCA, get through the security and show up at his office. And so that's what he was saying when we surprised him. But I think it was June, if somebody remind me, I think our big give was like June 14th or somewhere in June. It was June. So to think that that happened in 1 year is unbelievable. It's just kudos to you. I mean, it's resilience and determination and grit. The words that come to mind are just pretty amazing.
Yeah. And I see someone asked what the location is. It's 4900 East McNichols, right at the corner of Davison and 6 Mile.
Now, how is that building going to, I mean, we know it's going to really help your program. Is it going to allow you to have more students be part of the program? Is it just an easier location for the existing students? Like, what's the kind of resulting, which will result in part of that?
Right. So what it's going to result in, we're still going to have our West location, which is located in Life Remodeled at Durfee Innovation Society. So I would say 95% of our youth don't have transportation or reliable transportation. So what that's going to do is that we have a lot of youth that's on the east side of Detroit. So that's going to give them a greater access to that location, as well as new youth that's enrolling in the program. Matter of fact, I think this is one of our biggest summers as far as the number of youth that want to be a part of the program. And by having an east side presence, it's going to make in-person learning even more viable. But also, we're going to launch it. We're going to be virtual plus in-person. So to make sure that we're doing the proper social distancing and things of that nature. So pretty awesome. Pretty awesome.
That's just incredible. Thank you for that update. So Coleman, tell us what you've been up to in the past year.
Our gardens, you know, so much of our time, energy, and talent come from volunteers. And so last year with the pandemic, a lot of our normal volunteers were incredibly hesitant to bring groups out and things like that. And so, but the trade that got made was that we got probably six diehard volunteers who just said, I'm here 5 days a week. And I don't want to alienate anybody, but if I had to, like, you know, gun to your head, you have to decide, you know, 100 one-day volunteer groups or five-day-a-week folks, I really liked our five-day-a-week folks. And so we just became this weird little COVID gardening family that was together almost every day, working in the garden or working over at Sprout. We, when the pandemic started and by the time you guys had come out, we had been doing these free produce bags. And so we've been handing out free produce bags since the pandemic started. We just handed out our 14,000th bag of free produce for families in Pontiac. So, you know, this little band of volunteers became our little food family. And we've spent a lot of time, we've learned a lot through this grant. If you get quoted one thing by an office that says, here's how much it's going to cost to put water in your garden, that's only their fee. It doesn't include like the, hey, we have to ask fee and the here's your meter fee. And then we have to send another person to hook it up fee. We're learning that some things are way more expensive than we had anticipated. We are learning that nothing is fast, like garden people. Some of you are garden people and that's great. The greenhouse and growing community moves at the speed of a garden, which is not terribly fast. We've started the conversation with a greenhouse company back in August, and we picked the one we want. We said, this is what we're after. And when can we get that? Well, parts come in when they come in, and we just, it's like, this does not feel like a plan. So some things, we're learning that some things in some parts of the gardening world just move a little slower than other parts, and that's okay. Last fall we demoed our site and said, this is where, our greenhouse is going to go. And so now we are waiting for our supplier to get all the parts together, which we've been waiting for since last fall. But it should be here the first week of May and we get to build it. We have helpers from General Motors and ExxonMobil who are ready to help us put that up whenever the time comes, and BorgWarner. So we've got a number of great folks and friends and partners and organizations that are ready to help us build that thing as soon as it hits our property. So coming soon.
And you, so I was going back yesterday and kind of rereading the project descriptions for both of your groups. And yours, it said that it would be like basically a 400% increase in production of food is what you were, yes, what you're thinking. So that takes you from, that's obviously a huge increase, sure, but what does that mean for Pontiac, or what does that mean? Will that mean that you're able to provide more food to existing families? Will that mean that you're going to expand your service? Like how is that going to help? How is that going to impact? Sure.
So we've been sort of teetering on the edge of this ability to make the jump to be able to start sourcing, folks like restaurants and area CSAs and things like that. And, we have our vegetable store that we run as well, but being able to do that and sell to those outlets means then that we can invest that money back into our people, which means that we can hire more people from the neighborhood. Right now, anytime a job, we kind of hit a revenue place where a job is able to be created, we immediately turn to our neighborhood and we go, okay, who's in the neighborhood that we can hire to work in our gardens? And so right now we have Vernon and Javier are they started as juniors in high school and now they just finished their second year of college. Like they've been with us for 4 years, which is wild. And they're both studying environmental science at Eastern Michigan. And they both want to be park rangers because they love being outside and working with plants. And like, that's what they want to do. And so we've got them working for us, Brandy and Tanya and Baya all work at our produce store. And so to be able to generate more revenue means that we'll be able to create more jobs. And, we're in a weird negotiation right now with a local church, and I don't want to like jinx it, but they're donating us like a big van, and there's like 15 passenger van, but then there's also like a big van. And we've seen models in Chicago and other places where they've taken it and retrofitted that and turned it into a mobile vegetable store. And so we do a series of pop-ups around the city already, but to transition those into a mobile would be really, really cool. And I think that this jump in produce would let us do more locations and be able to drive that thing around so people could buy vegetables off of the bus.
Wow. So Gianna has reminded me that a large part of the unmet need in Pontiac is the lack of ability to have fresh food, fresh produce, or lack of proximity to fresh produce, and the plastic shopping bags, and why local people couldn't carry the fresh groceries home. Could you just tell everyone about that?
Sure. So I live in a neighborhood where one third of my neighbors are on disability, and another third of our neighbors like don't have cars. The nearest grocery store is a mile and a half away, and so and on the other side of Telegraph, so across six lanes of traffic. And so to get from here to there, if you have money, if you have your bridge card, if you have whatever, you have to walk the mile and a half there. And when people get there, they have to decide, what do I want to try to carry a mile and a half back to my house? Oh, because we don't have buses that go to Waterford. To ride in the Pontiac taxi cab company, it's $11 each way from here to there. A mile and a half. Ridiculous. So if you walk that full way and you get there, you have to decide what you want to carry a mile and a half back to your house. And so you have to decide, do I want to carry a bag of chips or do I want to carry a bag of apples? And a lot of times people decide on the chips just because it's the lightest thing to try and carry back. And then what happens all the time, and if you drive from my house to the grocery store, you will always see on the sidewalk food where people's bags have torn or broken, because bags aren't designed to be carried a mile and a half. They're actually designed to be carried 75 feet. The furthest walk. So, you know, if you're at the grocery store, you buy it, you grab your food, you put it in your cart, you check out, you put your food in the bags, and then you put your bags back in your cart, you roll it out to your car. The furthest walk a grocery bag is designed to make is from the trunk of your car to your kitchen, not designed to be carried that far. And so oftentimes people's bags will break, and rather than risking breaking other bags, they'll just leave the food on the sidewalk. But rather than go through all that hassle, if you're just hungry right now, there is a gas station, liquor store, and a weird thrift store that also sells expired Little Debbie's treat that you can walk to and grab something quick to eat, bag of chips, just some junk, whatever. There's You Buy We Fry down there also. And so health-related issues or diet-related healthy issues are rampant in my neighborhood. So high blood pressure, diabetes, prediabetes, heart disease, are all very, very common in my neighborhood. And as a result, people in my zip code die 5 years earlier than the national average. These are all food-related issues that my neighborhood has struggled with. And so when we moved in, we were on the map, red, on the USDA website, because we were a food desert. Because of our food work, because of our vegetable store here now, because of all the food stuff that we do, we've been downgraded to orange. We are now an orange food desert, which is still means we have a long way to go, but we're heading in the right direction, which is really exciting.
Thank you so much for sharing that. I think I hope what all of you heard is what is the impact that each of our $100,000 grants had for both Eric and Coleman in just the project. But what I've been thinking a lot about, especially as I've been reading personally, I'm on one of the focus area committees and reading through the grants and trying to make the decision of which finalists we would have, is just that the idea of the transformational change and how Impact 100 grants, when we look at all six of our winners in the past years, we're almost like a domino that just, you know, the organization in the leader has positioned themselves to get to a certain place. And then our grant comes along and just like kicks this domino that allows the nonprofit leader to just take the organization to the next step. And Eric, I'm curious from your perspective, how have you felt that? You've shared with us what the $100,000 did. And I love that it was a negotiation tool to get you the one. I mean, the fact too that you own this and free and clear, right. It's just unbelievable. Well, it's not unbelievable, but it's incredible. But what else maybe has happened that you would attribute to Impact 100, the process, the whatever, that maybe we wouldn't know because we just wouldn't know? Are there any other kind of anecdotes, stories, people that have come around in your life because of this?
Yes. I'll say quite a lot of people have come around. First of all, the first impact is there is a major difference from buying than renting, without a doubt. I'm a homeowner, lived in 8 different cities, purchased 8 different houses, right, as I moved across the United States. And there is a difference. And also there's a major financial difference as far as building equity and building upon something that you can really customize for the purpose and intent. So the first impact was by purchasing this building, it opened up the avenue to meet a lot of the people that come into the space, that see, now they can physically come, see what we're trying to get accomplished. And a couple of those people are as follows. Number one, I got a chance to meet the principal at Osborne High School. What we're gonna be starting this summer, because of the relationship now, is that they have a greenhouse. If you go to those that either alumni of the school or whatever, it's a big greenhouse at Osborne High School. It's been unutilized, and it's a big green space at the school that where all the classes face that green space. And the principal said, you know, is there anything you can do here to kind of bring this to life? So what we're going to be doing, we're going to be working with 15 youth. We also are going to be partnering with General Motors, their track program for their entry engineers, who are going to be helping us with, they're going to be our tutors for our after school program. So what we're going to do is we're going to link those 15 youth up to a math program. Okay. And then also what the youth are going to be doing there, we're going to utilize that greenhouse to actually grow the flowers and things that we plant. So it's going to be like a ecosystem that we're going to be creating. That is, the youth are going to be planting flowers, let's call it. They're going to learn, from a mathematics standpoint, from a horticultural standpoint, we're going to be teaching those classes. But the after part, the other part of that is that they're going to use, once the flowers start to bloom and things of that nature, we're going to allow the students to choose either a senior citizen's home or residence in that area and use those flowers to actually go out and have the whole student body to go out and plant those flowers at a senior citizen's home. It's going to be something similar to what we did 2 years ago, where we adopted Friendship Meadows senior citizen's home in Detroit. It's one of the biggest senior citizens living complexes in the city of Detroit. It's 206 residents. We planted a rose bush for every resident because we want every person to say we wanted every senior to know. Every time you look outside that window and see that rose bush, two things we want you to know. Number one, that you're loved and you're not forgotten. And the second thing we want you to know is that it was a youth that got on their hands and knees and planted their rose bush in honor of you. So that once again, once that thing starts to bloom, and if you go to Friendship Meadows in about a month from now, you're gonna see a ton of rose bushes that's gonna be blooming in several different colors, pink, yellow, white, red. And once again, we said, and we purposely planted the rose bushes outside of the windows of every resident to let them know that that's their rose bush planted for them in their honor. So what's going to make this even greater now is that once again, those 15 youth at Osborne High School, they're going to grow those bushes from the seed up. And then they're going to take those bushes that they've planted and take them their time to do by the hundreds. And we're going to be planting those plants in honor of people throughout the city of Detroit to know that they're loved. So that's one of the projects that we had in one of the connections. The other one is with the Hannon Center. We had the opportunity to meet with the Hannon Center. For those that know, they deal with one of the most, they have one of the biggest groups of aged citizens that they deal with throughout the city of Detroit. One of the biggest problems with senior citizens, as all of us know that have had parents, is loneliness. Tackling loneliness and being isolated from resources. So we're hooking up with the Hannon Center, and we're going to be doing a project. They reached out to us and said, "Eric, we know you deal with a lot of seniors. We want to do something with Google Nest, whereby we want you to create a project whereby you can have your seniors to hook up via Google Nest. And therefore, and we're going to put programming through there so that, let's say, once a week, the seniors can get together on Google Nest. They can see each other. They can have a conversation. They can also have access to resources programming through Google Nest." So that's what we're going to be doing. So we have some youth from AmeriCorps. They're going to be working on that project in the next 2 weeks. And we're going to hook up, I think, about 10 seniors right now just to get it going. And once again, but the ultimate goal is to break that cycle of loneliness that exists with a lot of our seniors. So that's another project that we're working on. Another thing that came about, and thanks a lot, is we have 15 youth that have graduated from the Lawn Academy. They're now in school. They're in college. They're all coming back this summer to give. They're going to come back through AmeriCorps. So we work with the state of Michigan. They're all coming back through community service, Michigan Community Service Commission. And they're going to all come back as AmeriCorps youth this summer to be tutors into the program. And what they're going to be also working on is a service project with the police department, whereby one of the biggest items that we have right now in neighborhoods of color, with African Americans or anyone with color, is this thing between police officers and our youth. So what we're going to be doing is helping to bridge that gap this summer, whereby we're going to have forums where the police department, you got a chance to meet a couple of those police officers when you came out, Kelly, to Tower location, Officer Parker and Officer Barry. And they're going to have forums with the youth to just have good sessions, to just open sessions about, you know, what's the role of community policing and what's the role of, you know, and what role do police officers play in our society so that there can be better dialogue. With the ultimate goal, and my ultimate goal is that once that youth is pulled over at the side of a road at say 2 o'clock in the morning and things of that nature, that two things occur. Number one, that youth understands that that police officer has a role to play. And also so that when that police officer approaches that vehicle, that they know that, wow, you know, we've had great interactions with these youth in the city of Detroit, that the heart rate doesn't come up so that that interaction does not become a negative interaction at 2 o'clock in the morning. So we're going to have real talk, real conversations. And I'm really looking forward to that. And it's going to be pretty awesome. So those are some of the things that we're doing and a lot of other things, but I'll kind of cut it off there.
Eric, awesome. That's incredible. And I think especially, you know, at this moment in time in our country, literally even this week, to think about how you are continuing to be a leader in solving some of these systemic issues and challenges that we're facing is just, you know, thank you. It's incredible. So Coleman, and can you remind us what's the name of the neighborhood with the rose bushes? So that had already been planted. Yes, Eric, I'm sorry. The neighborhood where you did the rose, yeah. Where the kids did the rose bushes 2 years ago.
Yeah, yes. It's Friendship Meadows. If you know the Velodome, those that, if you come down 75, you know that big white bubble, the Velodome off the expressway, almost right when you get to Detroit, Michigan, right downtown, right across the highway is Friendship Meadows.
Okay.
Yeah. Matter of fact, we were just there this past weekend because the entrance looked kind of shabby or whatever. So we had our AmeriCorps youth, and also the youth came out and they renovated that whole, we did a whole landscape out front, and it's pretty cool. It's real rose bushes, hibiscus, and it's beautiful out there now with at the front entrance. So anyway, so if you ever get a chance in about a month from now, drive by. If you ever want to see a ton of rose bushes, they look beautiful. Just come by and look at them.
That's incredible. Thank you.
Let's take a quick break to learn more about Impact 100 Metro Detroit.
Like what you're hearing? Join us. Across the country, Impact 100 organizations empower women as philanthropists to pool their resources and deliver a greater impact to their community. Impact 100 Metro Detroit, the first such group in Michigan, has experienced growth each year and will have given away over $860,000 since 2016. Each year, Impact 100 members donate $1,000 toward collective grants in increments of $100,000, which we award to nonprofit finalists who receive the most member votes. Our mission is to fuel transformation in Metro Detroit by uniting women to support local nonprofit heroes and award high-impact grants. Membership for the 2022 grant year is available now. Visit impact100metrodetroit.org to learn more or contact us at info@impact100metrodetroit.org. This information will also be available in the description box of this episode.
And we're back with our interview.
So Coleman, I remember last year when we did the kind of after the grant coffee and conversation, it was maybe a few weeks, less than a month after you'd received the check. And you shared with us that a foundation had called you and said, oh, we saw that you want impact. Now we want you to apply for an emergency money to do an additional program. So we know that impact happened. What else has happened over the past year that maybe we wouldn't know from being part of our Impact family?
Sure. So Impact 100, particularly the Metro Detroit chapter, just has such a, in the philanthropy and in the giving space, it's a very well-known name. And I think a lot of folks know the process and know that to get an Impact 100 grant is, it's not a flippant thing. It's not something, you know, it's not your grandma has a trust that she writes checks out of sometimes. Like it's a process, and there's a lot of review and there's a lot of input. And so along the way, as we, you know, we're fundraising for this community center right now. And so we're having conversations with a lot of big foundations, a lot of very serious corporations who say, you know, well, who, and the question, I've got the question more this year than any other year is, well, who's given to you in the past? And I always lead with Impact because folks will know who that is and know someone who's associated and that sort of thing. And so, you know, we have had conversations with GM and Chrysler and Kresge Foundation, the Community Foundation for Southeast Michigan, and so many others who are interested in this community center project that we're working on and the food work that we've been doing up until now. And so I always lead with Impact. But do you want a less rosy story about that foundation?
This is your forum. You tell us.
Great. So it was very funny because we submitted a grant to that foundation. They reviewed it. And they called me back and they said, turns out all of our money went to organizations that are sort of in organizational crisis right now, which a lot of organizations are. I mean, a lot of folks have had a really difficult time during the pandemic, especially. But they said, so, you know, we were excited about you because you did get that impact grant, but ultimately because you got the impact grant, we didn't determine that your organization was in crisis. And so we're not going to fund you this round. And I was like, oh, well, that's okay. But yeah, they said we take one application a year, but they did thank you, Emily. I appreciate your sorry. But it was totally great. But it's helped us build a great relationship with that foundation. And they said, you know, we only take one application per organization per year, but our whole board decided that we really love what you're doing, so we really want you to apply again next quarter. And so that relationship is still there. They're still very excited. They've invited us, so they work pretty closely with Tollgate Farms. And so they invited, you know, Tollgate is on lockdown right now, but they have invited us out tomorrow to come look at their property and talk about ways that we can partner together with Tollgate and with their foundation. And so it has been a net gain with them, even though we weren't granted this grant that they asked us to apply for. But it has just really elevated our position in conversations with the foundation community, because they know that to get an Impact 100 grant is something that took a lot of work and a lot of effort. And a lot of people reviewed your organization and said, this is a worthy mission and a worthy organization. So it's still been a really, really, even though we missed that one grant, like, it's been such a help to us as we've been working on this community center.
So I do want to take a moment for those of us that may be on the call who aren't yet Impact 100 members, or maybe aren't, just take a moment to help kind of lift up a little bit more what Coleman said, and why I think that, as we're seeing over the years, particularly how Impact 100 Metro Detroit grants are helping organizations that are grant winners, helping them in the future. So our process is one woman, one vote. And because of that, we're bringing women together from all over the Metro Detroit region. And we have a growing number of people who aren't living in Detroit, aren't living in our region, but have strong ties to the region. I see one person here, Marie is one of our Colorado members. And what we're doing, though, is we're bringing all of our backgrounds and our experiences and bringing that to the grant process. And having that diversity of experiences and is what informs our conversations and our learnings with one another. And I think ultimately why the organizations that we bring forward as semifinalists and finalists have such, it's just an entirely different process than a foundation. It's not one program officer or a small group of people making determinations. This is a group, these are large numbers of women that have a variety of backgrounds coming together and having discerning conversations. And then at the end, voting on the organizations, the projects that we feel like make the most impact. And it's great to hear from both of you that that's being recognized within additional founders. And we have great pride in that. And we hope that, you know, you're part of the Impact 100 family, and any kind of quote unquote seal of approval that we can offer is wonderful. So do we have questions? I know there's been some great chat, but I wanna make sure we give an opportunity for others to ask their questions. I'm not dominating the conversation.
Well, I can ask the question, Kelly, that I texted to you.
Sure.
Which is, Coleman, you were talking about and I remember learning this from you last year when we were doing the site visit, about the bags breaking and, you know, so people can't carry it. Would there be any benefit? Is there any need? Would it be useful, whatever, to make available to your neighbors either reusable grocery bags, tote bags? I've seen both. Impact has, you know, reusable, the big sort of tote bag size ones, but I've also seen ones that work. They're shaped like the plastic grocery bags you get from the grocery, but they're actually fabric, mm-hmm. so that they're small enough to be rolled up and stuck in your pocket or your purse or whatever.
Oh, nice.
Or those rolling grocery carts, would that be helpful? Like if you had those rolling grocery carts, for instance, if you had a set of four or five of them that somebody could borrow to take to be able to walk to the grocery store and back, would that be a useful thing?
Sure. So we'll start with, we have a pretty good grant through the health division this year and last year to hand out reusable bags. And so we've purchased a bunch of them, hand them out pretty often. We find that people use them, that our neighbors wear them out faster because they use them to carry a plethora of things. So it could be books, it could be, you know, their stuff, it could be groceries, it could be whatever. So they wear out pretty quickly. The thing about rolling carts is I know that when the check got delivered last year, I had a brand new baby Now I have a almost 1.5 year old, and I now know firsthand how difficult it is to get anything with wheels through this neighborhood on the sidewalks. They are miserable. And I have, you know, I've learned that specifically this year, just pushing a stroller around the neighborhood, how bad our sidewalks are. So I would say anything helps for sure. And ultimately, I don't know that the bags are not our neighbor's biggest barrier to get to the grocery store. It's disability and it's distance. And so the bags help for sure, but it is probably the third or fourth factor. It is not the first or second.
Thanks, Emily, for asking the question. Any other questions of Eric or Coleman? So number one, I saw in Crane's last two or three weeks that you're part of the new BIPOC CEO group that has been put together of nonprofit leaders. And you know, diversity, inclusion, equity is such an important aspect of the community's growth. And I'd love if you could take a moment to talk to us about that group, your involvement in that group, if you see any opportunities of how Impact could be supportive of both either the leaders, the organizations, that group in and of itself, and just educate us all about that project and what's happening there.
Yes, so the project is about, there are nine organizations led by African-Americans who kind of got together, and we're all in that space of youth development. We're all in that space. And one thing that's common about the group is that, you know, we look at equity, we look at, financial equity. And one thing we noticed is that a lot of the, in this grant space, a lot of monies are funneled to organizations that are not with people of color. And it can be quite devastating for a lot of organizations trying to do the right things of that nature. So the thought was to say, okay, come together, learn from each other to try to figure out, okay, what does it take to be successful in this space, and also to continue to make an impact, to make that impact. As a, for instance, you know, like I look at Impact 100 and what meant so much to me, I'm telling you, the thing that meant so much to me with Impact 100 is the fact that there were 100 women with one vote apiece, and that said, you know what, I want to put my vote towards something that I think can make a difference. And just to even the thought, just the thought of it, that people thought enough of the Lawn Academy and the work that we're doing to say, you know what, I would like for my money that's this hard, that I work for so hard, to go towards something, to go toward this work. And I'm kind of choked up about that, because that really means a lot to me. Because to me, that this grant has meant more than anything I've ever received, right? But at the same time, if you look at the normal grant situation, most grants of $50,000 to $100,000 and above, if you were to do like a heat map or try to do some type of a bell curve, right? And if you look at how many organizations of color receive that, that would be at that 99.9% percentile that's out there, right? So then you look at it and say, wow. And Coleman talked about the Skillman organization. They had a, they brought this up as far as one of the problems that they saw in this space. And that is, and the easiest way to see it is that if you go to a grant, if you go to a grant event to see who are the people that, you know, are running all of these organizations, and are doing, you know, a lot of great things. But when you look at the room, you would be hard pressed to find a person of color in that room. So once again, the main purpose of that is to say, okay, what is it that we can do together to make that impact? And I think, for instance, like we teamed up with Miss the person over at Midnight Golf, Miss Fluker. She's awesome. She's got one of the best programs I've ever seen. Those that know Midnight Golf, right? She started it. She's the founder. She does a lot of great things, and she's taking that program to like this national level. So having people like that on the team and others to show others the way to say, you know what, this is how you migrate. This is how you, you know, work with different companies and things of that nature. And I think the best way I can explain it, kind of how it looks, is that we won a grant one time. It was for $1,000. Just to put it in perspective, it was for $1,000. And think about this. My wife and I, you know, we're thankful that with the Lawn Academy, we pretty much funded the Lawn Academy from the beginning until we just got too big and we just couldn't do it anymore. But my point is, but this grant was for $1,000. The person that wrote that grant, she was one of our partners. Dr. Stevenson, she helped to write the grant. And then when it was time for that grant to be awarded for $1,000, she was standing right next to me, just right next to me. And then the banker came to give us the grant. He gave the grant to her. And I'm standing right next to her. She said, no, that's not my organization. That's his organization. If you saw the look on his face, he reluctantly took the grant out of her hands. And it's like it was a heavy weight for him to hand me $1,000 check, as if it took almost everything in him to do that. So that's only $1,000. Just to understand the magnitude of what we're speaking of. So the operating grant for the Lawn Academy, remember, was over $100,000 per year. So my wife and I, you know, we would give 20-30% of that every year toward the Lawn Academy, because we believe in it that much. So, but the point being is that if you extrapolate that out and say, okay, if it was that tough for a person, first of all, the thought was, if two people are standing side by side, the person made the conscious decision to say, this person over here is the one that gets the $1,000 and the other one doesn't. That's what we're trying to change, right? So that's where diversity, inclusion, and that's where that's what it means so much. So once again, I would say the biggest thing that I think Impact 100 can play toward this is just to show the world. And I'm like with Coleman, I'm always so I pronounce so much and say so much how Impact 100 means so much, because once again, it shows how the thoughts of people and individual contributions of a group of people can make a big difference in the decision. And it's not all person or one entity. And I thank you guys. I think the best thing you can do is to show that model. I think the model that you have, it's one that means so much. And I think the philanthropic community can learn a whole lot from that. Right. Because I tell you what, I personally write all of our grants. I have never had a grant as tough as Impact 100's grant. And that's what it means so much to me also, because you guys were so rigorous with that grant. With, you know, Mr. DeBose, you know, calling, hey, dude, we need this. So just awesome. So it meant a lot. So once again, that's what I see in that space. And that's why I see the need of doing it, because we do want our organizations to thrive, but we do need to know, we do need to learn from each other as to how to make that happen. So that's.
Thank you. Thank you, Eric, for sharing your stories. I think, yes, thank you. And it was wonderful to see that the BIPOC group, that leadership group, is coming together. And please know that Impact is here to help in any way that we can elevate those nonprofits and those leaders, and educate. And I think I want everyone to know, as an organization, it's really diversity, inclusion, and equity is important to us, not only in our membership, but as part of our grant process. We added this year to our application, we asked for the boards, and we asked a specific question, members of the board, and then we asked a specific question of how does your leadership reflect the individuals that you're serving? And I will tell you from my focus area's perspective, we had conversations around that, and it helped make several decisions in terms of how we thought about the organizations. And our hope is that having that question be part of our application helps organizations understand that this is important to us, but also if it's not something that is already in their organization culture, that they need to be thinking about it as they're applying for grants, not just ours, but in general. So thank you. Thank you very much, Eric. So we're coming close to the end of our conversation today. Something that very few of you had the opportunity to hear, but I did because it was when we were at the very beginning and I wasn't hitting record yet, was that Eric and Coleman talked about they're visiting each other. And they're going to be sharing Coleman's getting ready to kind of dip his toe into lawn maintenance, lawn projects with MICA 6, and said to Eric, I'd love your insights. And Eric said, so what was especially amazing is this morning they were already talking about collaborating with one another, which from an impact standpoint, like, amazing. And to think that in 30 some odd days, we're going to be bringing in two more incredible organizations into this Impact 100 family is pretty awesome. I will also say we have decided that we're going to start doing some more in-person things. So for those of you who are members, May 1st will be our first in-person. We're just going to do coffee and donuts in a parking lot. we'd love to see as many people as possible. But we're also going to get out to both of these sites. We'll go out and do some things with MICA 6. Something Coleman referenced but didn't talk a lot about was the Webster Elementary project that he's doing. Go to their website. It's amazing. We're going to get everybody through that to see it, as well as volunteer. And then Eric, I asked him, how can we help you before June 12th? How can we help you get that building ready? So hopefully we'll have some opportunities there, and then hopefully throughout the summer to do some things as well outside, all that kind of fun stuff. So, any last thoughts, Coleman, Eric, that you want to share with the group before we wrap up for the morning?
Yeah, so, go ahead, Coleman. Go ahead.
Sure. I'm always incredibly grateful for the not only, you know, I said somewhere, I think probably the catch up about 6 months ago was it has very much felt like support from this organization. It didn't end with the check. It started with the check, that there were so many of you who have reached out, come out, volunteered, showed up at events, called and said, hey, I've got coats I'd like to donate, or I've got some time to spend in the garden, and have loved being part of the family. I'm incredibly grateful for every one of you and all the, and just encouragement. So many of you have just sent emails and just said, love what you're doing, keep going. And that means a lot, especially on exhausting days. And so, just love being here, love being a part of it, and definitely am here. If anybody wants to come take a tour, if anybody wants to come garden, even in this conversation, a couple folks have sent me a message and said, I want to come work in the garden. And so we can get you on our list and make sure that you can come out soon. So thank you so much just for all the love, all the support, all the encouragement. And I'm looking forward to keeping it going. Thank you.
Awesome. Eric?
Yes, and I'll say the same thing. First of all, ditto to what told me. Number one, you guys are just awesome. Just want you to know that you're very, very awesome. And once again, once you see that East Side location, you're going to see something that's going to really be the pinnacle of what youth development is all about. The piece I didn't tell you that you're going to see it, get a chance to see it, is that 3 years from now, that location is going to be run by one of the youth. Forgot to tell you that. That's what's going to be happening. So and it's going to serve as what we're going to be doing in other places. So the youth are going to be responsible for the P&L of that facility. So that's what we're going to be teaching them. So anyway, all to say, I'm looking forward to seeing you guys when, once you get your vaccine shots and all that kind of good stuff and things open up. I'm looking forward to seeing you out at on the corner of 6 Mile and Davison. Check us out at lineacademy.com. I love you guys, and just be safe, and just thank you so much. Thank you.
Well, on behalf of every person on this call, I'm going to thank you for fueling transformation in our community. And we're just honored to be able to play a small part in your story. And we're your biggest cheerleaders, and anything that we can be doing to help you, you know, count us in. So thank you. Thank you, everyone. I hope this was a wonderfully inspirational way to start my morning, and I hope it was yours as well. So thank you to everyone, and have a wonderful day.
Thank you for listening to Fueling Transformation, hosted by Impact 100 Metro Detroit. If you enjoyed this episode, please like and share and invite your friends and family to subscribe. You can learn more about the amazing work of Impact 100 Metro Detroit on our website at impact100metrodetroit.org. We're also on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter. Follow us for the latest happenings at Impact 100 Metro Detroit.